Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today. Unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. Today we're going to do a bit of a Q&A show. There's so many questions that you guys are posting right now on Facebook. But first, we're going to start off with questions that have been maybe unfairly neglected. These are some questions from Greg that were posted, I think, maybe a few weeks ago, and we didn't get to it in that show and the show after that, so we're going to do them right now. And these are the questions, I think these are good questions, because they really get at the heart of what libertarianism means. What does it really mean? What does our ideology really say when you really get down to it? And the first question is probably the biggest question for the liberty movement to answer. It's probably one of the most important questions we can answer. The question's really simple. Go ahead and list some things you want our government to do because they're better at it than the free market. In other words, what can the government do that the free market cannot do? In order for the free market to be able to do something, it needs to offer you something that you're willing to pay for, basically. If you're not willing to pay for a thing, then the free market cannot really provide it. Now, that doesn't mean it needs to be something purely selfish. I mean, of course, charities are part of the free market. Charities compete with other charities. If you don't believe me, ask anybody who works at a charity, and they will tell you that fundraising is a very, very competitive jungle, if you will, where different charities compete with other charities for philanthropic donations. The Libertarian Party, even though is not considered a charity in the traditional sense, is a political nonprofit organization. We also compete, and we compete with other political organizations. We compete with charities. We realize that even billionaires only have a certain amount of money to give, and they're going to decide who to give it to. And a charitable organization or a nonprofit organization has to compete. So it doesn't mean that something has to be purely selfish for the free market to provide. It just has to be something that you are willing to pay for. If you're not willing to pay for something, the free market cannot provide it. Or if someone's not willing to pay for it, the free market cannot provide it. Somebody has to be willing to pay for a thing. Now, conversely, if people are willing to pay for a thing, if people are willing to pay, then the free market can almost certainly provide it, whatever that thing is. Classic question is roads. Can the free market provide roads? Let me ask you, would you be willing to pay a few dollars a year or a few hundred dollars a year for the right to use roads? Understanding that if you didn't pay for it, then you wouldn't have any roads to drive on. And if you did pay, then you would. Most people say yes. Some people say no. Some people say, listen, I'm fine in my house. I'll use Skype to get what I want. I'll have stuff delivered. I'm not paying a single cent. You might pay indirectly for the road through delivery fees, but you're not. I'm just going to stay in my house. I don't need to leave. That's fine. But a pretty significant number of businesses, you know, things like trucking, individuals who are going to work or school or just for fun will be willing to pay for road use. And so roads are the type of thing that the free market will provide. What about things like law enforcement, dispute resolution? That's a big one, right? Humans aren't perfect. We sometimes disagree. Sometimes humans lie to each other. That's right. Sometimes they'll try to trick each other. They'll try to steal from each other through fraud or force. And we often buy into this ideology that says that courts, to settle, you know, these type of disputes, must be run by the government, that the free market cannot provide that type of arbitration or dispute resolution that you get in a court. But the fact is, we all know that's not true. We all use private sector dispute resolution a million times more often than we use the public sector. A simple example, you buy a product. It's not exactly what you wanted it to be. something's wrong with it. Maybe it's the wrong product. Maybe they sent you the right thing, but it's just not very good. So what do you do next? Do you go to court? Do you sue them in court? Almost never. 99 times out of 100, if you bought the thing from Amazon or eBay or whatever, you simply call Amazon or eBay and say you were unsatisfied, and then they handle it. That's a private sector court system, basically. It's a private sector dispute resolution system. And we use it all the time. Why do we use it? Because it's convenient. It's not annoying. In fact, you rarely even have to use it because companies know that they're going to be punished by Amazon or eBay if they don't, you know, act correctly. So they just, you know, kind of take care of it. On the flip side, if you just have like fraudulent nonsense, like let's say you order something really expensive and say like, I didn't like it. They have, you know, fraud investigations and things like that. And they'll follow up on the other side as well. So we have private sector dispute resolution. Now, let's say that wasn't good enough. What's the next thing you do? The next thing you do, maybe call your credit card company, right? That's about as far as you take it. In fact, I would bet that of the people on social media right now, the people listening to the show right now, almost none have been to court for a financial issue. And those that have been to court for a financial issue have used private sector dispute resolution 500 times as often. The free market can provide dispute resolution. It does it well. And for bigger things, I mean, people say, well, you know, these are small, you know, maybe not such significant things. There are many other ways to handle big issues. Big issues, you have like escrow, where if there's some mistrust in an account or in an agreement or a contract, you put a huge pile of money in escrow to say that if, you know, one of the sides defaults on their side of the bargain, then there's an automatic financial penalty that's taken care of, again, through a free market system. And it's very simple to do. Now, some of you guys are wondering, well, what about things like murder? What about these really heinous crimes? And that's a really tricky one. There's no question about that. And traditionally, it's something we've relied on public sector courts to handle. But interestingly, there is somebody that is more of an expert, David Friedman, a son of Milton Friedman, the legendary economist, who, in my opinion, David Friedman's ideas are actually a lot more interesting, even though, you know, he's well known, but, you know, not as well known as his father. I think his ideas are more interesting. And in his book, Machinery of Freedom, and in some of his lectures, he's talked about, you know, ways to handle things like that. But let's look at the upside of this, right? When you have governments doing law enforcement dispute resolution, what do? They find a way to keep themselves funded. If there's not enough rapes in your city or murders, what do? Create a war on drugs. That way they have just nonsense to go after constantly. Set up speeding tickets so they can keep on robbing you without any legitimate justification. Or even if there are plenty of rapes in your city, what have we seen? We've seen that law enforcement doesn't have time. Currently, there's a backlog of literally thousands of rape kits that law enforcement, government-run law enforcement, hasn't done anything about. There are many ways that a free market can handle this. Now, I'm not an expert in law enforcement and the free market, but I can just give you some basic ideas. One of the biggest parts is insurance. You buy insurance to deal with these problems. Today, you can buy fire insurance. You can buy theft insurance, for that matter. In fact, the police, one of the reasons that the police don't do as little as they do when somebody gets burglarized, people get theft insurance anyway. Because they know the police aren't going to do anything. It's a vicious circle, I guess. Now, we're going to do a few more questions after this break, but let me just see if I can squeeze one more in here. It says, explain how you keep law and order in a place where you have private security forces akin to warlords. Well, let's look at places that do have private security. You go to casinos in Las Vegas, very discreet private security. You go to banks, discreet private security. You go to a nice building, you have discreet private security. They're polite. They don't, you know, rob you for nonsense. They don't misdirect their resources towards seeing how you're enjoying yourself in your private life. I would say they're actually a lot less like warlords than the people we have breaking into grandmother's houses looking for a half ounce of marijuana. They're a lot less like warlords than people who go into a family's house, shoot the dog for some minor amount of drugs. If you want to see warlords in action, look at how police SWAT teams are acting right now. Look at the tanks that they're using. Look at the aggression with which they're breaking into people's homes and saying, no, 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 you cannot enjoy yourself in this way in your own home. Listen, I don't use any drugs. I don't even drink. I personally think it's just kind of stupid. But that's just my opinion. That's my opinion. That's how I set my own personal life. I'm not going to go around, you know, using violence and force to harass other people. And the thing is, most of you aren't willing to do that. Even people who are in favor of the war on drugs, they're not willing to pay for it. They're like, yeah, I guess it's a good idea. Let's get those drug hippies. But if they had to pay for it, well, things change. That's the beauty of the free market. Free market law enforcement can't do stupid things, because if their competitors don't, their competitors will charge less. If you can have law enforcement that's just as good but costs less, you will choose the one that's just as good and costs less. You will not pay an extra several hundred dollars a year to subsidize something as stupid as the war on drugs. So if you want to improve law enforcement, the way to do that is to get the government out of it. Let private companies compete and let them do it in a way that's profitable for them and beneficial for their customers. Not the kind of nonsense we have right now where we are all being robbed and taxed. You want to talk about warlords, somebody that comes in and takes your money by force and uses that to harass your neighbor, to terrify their family, to shoot the family dog. I don't even know how many family dogs have been shot in this war on drugs, but it's not a few. It is a lot of dogs that have been shot for no legitimate reason. And whatever you think about the owners, I can't imagine what all these dogs have done to deserve this kind of treatment. So if you want to talk about warlords, that's what we have right now. That's what we need to get rid of. Private sector law enforcement is our way to get rid of this nonsense. We're going to talk a little bit more about this after this break. If you want to get involved in the one organization that understands that the job of the government is either to serve or to get out of the way or to cease to exist, go to lp.org. You can run for office, join an existing campaign, but that first step is up to you, lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. Our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Life is complicated, and sometimes we all need a little help, but don't have the time for a full hour-long session or don't know who to turn to. That's where BetterHelp comes into play. With BetterHelp, I can get matched with one of over 2,500 licensed and approved counselors and therapists and get help anytime, anywhere, totally private. For a flat weekly fee starting at $35, I can connect with my counselor via text, chat, video conference, or phone, which is great for me because I'm always on the go. And I can go back to previous sessions whenever I want through my secure account from anywhere in the world. It's a great feeling to know that help is there, affordable, private, and convenient to my schedule. We all can use a little help. Visit betterhelp.com/VA health and register for free. You can try it for 7 days without being charged on your credit card and get matched with a licensed counselor usually within 24 hours. Get BetterHelp today at betterhelp.com/VA health.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Let's answer the first question. Go ahead, list some things you want our government to do because they're better at it than the free market. My answer is nothing. The law enforcement, absolutely not. Law enforcement has been turned into such a catastrophe by the government that honestly nothing would be better. Even if there was no free market, I would choose nothing over what the government is doing right now. I would choose nothing over being robbed and having the money used to terrorize my neighbors. I would choose nothing over that. Fortunately, the free market can give us a lot better than nothing. You've seen how private security works. It's friendly because private security is usually hired by private organizations that want your business. If you had private security insurance to cover your house, it would try to give you the services that you wanted, not the services that you didn't want. Now, one of the other ones that people talk about, well, what about military? I mean, what is the military doing right now that's useful? Honestly, what is it? What is it doing that is useful? Now, I know you're thinking I'm going to say nothing, but no, it's not nothing. There are things that the military does that's useful. It keeps shipping lanes open. The Navy does that so that, you know, we can have these big, huge, heavy products going overseas. But that's, again, the type of thing that can be paid for by the free market. Who would pay for it? Shipping companies. Through what method? Insurance. Or whatever other method they wanted to. But the other thing that the military is doing is just, it's useless. It's worse than useless. Who would pay to have us go in to the Middle East and have, you know, American young men and women go in the Middle East and squander their lives and heroism and blood on this kind of foolishness, this non-strategy that has no goal of any kind? No one would. And that's the point. We don't want that because it's not good. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of heroism. It's a waste of life. Now, could companies provide the kind of security that we actually need? Probably. It's important to realize when we think about the free market is not everything is a mom and pop shop. I mean, listen, as a guy that runs a small business, I have a soft spot for small businesses, but they're also big businesses. These big, huge infrastructure things that are often required for defense. There are companies that can do that. I mean, companies make buildings. In fact, it is private companies that make these weapons in the first place. And there's a million different ways that we can figure out how to do this. Most likely, it would be something through Kickstarter or something similar, voluntary donations used to pay for defense by those who believe that we should have defense. And those that want to go and terrorize people in other countries are welcome to pay for it. There's probably just not going to be that much money for it. If the Vietnam War had been funded through donations, it would have ended 5 seconds after it started, or it never would have started. If this war we have right now that's been going on for over 16 years now, if that was funded by donations, it would have stopped. You know, whatever your opinion is about the initial goals of the war, they've been met. Osama bin Laden's dead. He was killed. We're still there. Why? The only possible reason that I can think of is that it makes defense contractors rich. So the real question is, who would make defense contractors rich without the government? No one. That's the point. Now let's look at some more of these questions. Next question. If there is no bottom line for a company, how will you ever fund basic research? This is just such a silly question. I don't even know where to begin. What do you think? Kindles don't have any basic research in them? iPads have no basic research in them? Cell phones no basic research? There's always profit in basic research that's useful. Now, some of the basic research that's funded right now is extremely stupid. And so, yeah, there's not going to be funding for that. Why? Because it's dumb. There shouldn't be funding for it. There's no reason for a lot of that research. But a lot of that biomedical research, who's going to do that? I would assume medical companies, drug companies. And again, they'd have more money to spend on research because they're spending a lot less money on FDA red tape and busy work. So the question is, how would we fund useful basic research? There's always profit in it. And how would we fund useless basic research? The answer is, we wouldn't. What are the excesses and problems of the free market, and how would you regulate it? Well, are there really excesses in the free market? Like, what are these excesses that people talk about? I mean, people have been going on about price gouging lately. which is their view that if you charge too much at a time when people need a thing, that's somehow evil. But here's the thing. If a company charges too much and the other company next to it doesn't, then people go to the other company. If there is a shortage of a good, then the economically correct thing to do is to increase the price. That's how you determine who gets it. If stores don't, you know, quote, price gouge, what happens? Somebody buys everything from the store and they'll price gouge. What's the difference? And some of the things that people call price gouging are just such nonsense. I mean, people are selling water for less than they sell it in Disney World. If that's price gouging, Disney World is price gouging. Now, the question is price gouging the excess of the free market? No, it's self-correcting. If you charge too much and your competitors charge less, you're going to lose. The thing that the free market does well, actually, is that it is very responsive to increases in price. The thing the public sector does poorly is it's very unresponsive to increases in price. The government pays astronomical fees for weapons, for ashtrays, or any other kind of nonsense. Why? Because there's no real competition. They don't care. It's not their money. The free market, because we're all so selfish with our money. That's how we are. We want to keep our money. Because of that, the free market is constantly trying to find ways to lower costs. And so, yes, there will be times when there's going to be higher prices, when there's a shortage of things. But you compare those slightly high prices to the astronomical stuff we pay often for just straight garbage. I mean, look at the inflated price that people are paying for government school right now. You would never see that in the private sector because no one would make a school that bad and expect it to survive. The public sector makes us pay too much. It doesn't give us a choice, and it makes us pay far more than we ever would. Instead of prices being forced down as they should be, they're being constantly forced up. Now let's go to the next questions. All right, we have a bunch of questions coming in here on social media. Brent asks, is rent theft? No, of course not. If you buy a house, if you fix it up, if you make it really nice, if you use it for Airbnb, you charge somebody to stay in there, it's not theft. Why? Because they don't have to stay there. They can leave. They're not required to stay there. Theft means you're not giving a person a choice. If you have a choice, then it's not theft. If there was a choice, if I had a choice of whether or not to pay for government schools, I wouldn't consider them theft. I do consider them theft because I don't have a choice. If I wasn't forced to pay for them, I wouldn't pay a cent. Not one cent for that garbage. There is no one on earth that I hate enough that I would literally pay my own money to destroy their education. Not ISIS, no one. There's no one who I hate to that level that I want to destroy them from the inside like that, because that's what government schools do. So government schools are theft. Rent, not really, because you don't have to go there. You go somewhere else. Next question. Brent asks, is identity politics a good idea for LP leadership to push? I don't think so. Not really. I mean, identity politics is just collectivism. And we are an individualist movement. At the fundamental level, when we say, what is the most important thing about you, a libertarian understands it's the things that make you different from everyone else, not the groups you're in. What's special about you is not the things that you share with everybody else of your gender, your culture, your race, your ethnicity, your age group. That's not what's really important about you. That's the thing that libertarians get. That's kind of important. But the unique parts of you, the things that you share with no one else, that's what matters. That's why we fight for free speech. We don't care if your speech is accepted by the dominant culture or by any culture, because we understand that the greatest contributions you could possibly make to humanity are those that you share with no one else, where everyone else disagrees with you. Those are the most valuable things. So should the LP leadership push identity politics? I don't see the point. I personally don't. I know that there's others who do. I mean, there's no official libertarian answer to this. Strategically, me personally speaking right now, no. I think it's a bad idea. Nathan points out that the national debt is $20 trillion. Something to talk about. It is something to talk about. Where is that debt coming from? It's coming from spending. And if that debt continues, and the Federal Reserve keeps monetizing the debt, which means basically just, you know, giving cash for savings bond, which is essentially leads to the equivalent of printing more money just one step removed, it's going to lead to a monetary collapse. We need to shut that down. How do we shut it down? Stop spending on insane things. Stop spending on things that we don't want. Stop spending on things that we can't afford. Just stop spending. How about this? The money that I earn, I'll spend it. The money that politicians earn through whatever jobs they have, they can spend it on whatever they want to. But this ability to steal from us to fund their nonsense project, that has to go. That ability is not an ability that anyone should have. It's the heart of libertarianism. Brent asks, why did the LP chair accuse the Mises Institute of being a Nazi incubator? Well, I think that's taken a little out of context. I think the LP chair accused the head of Mises for using Nazi buzzwords in order to encourage donations. I remember what I said in the first part about how nonprofits are competitive. They compete for donations. Well, sometimes people who have real angry ideas are also willing to donate. And then you have a choice to make. Right now, white supremacy is growing. There's a lot of people, and maybe they're not all individually rich, but together that's a lot of money. And organizations have to decide whether or not to go after that money. In his speech, the head of the Mises Institute clearly made the choice to go after that money, to pander to that, not to to white supremacy. The Libertarian Party chose to reject that. And I'll just say, I don't think I've ever been more proud to be a libertarian than when I read the chair's comments on that speech where, you know, he deliberately used Nazi buzzwords. By the way, even to this point, he still hasn't said any. The head of Mises still hasn't rejected white supremacy or white nationalism. He still hasn't said, listen, go somewhere else. That's what the Libertarian Party did. That's what it means to be the party of principle. In doing so, that's turning away a fairly large and growing pool of donations. Undoubtedly. But if you're building an organization that's dependent on groups like that for donations, then your organization is morally, and in my opinion, also strategically doomed. It's a short-term gain for a long-term loss. And so why did the chair do that? Because he is a political, strategic genius. He did the exact right thing. I publicly supported him, and in case anybody's curious, I'm publicly supporting him again on that. It was the right move. And Chair Sarok and I haven't agreed on everything. There's many things we've disagreed on very strongly, but on this, we agree 100% that there is no room for racial nationalism to be the centerpiece of the liberty movement. That is not who we are. We are not collectivists. We are not people that try to subsidize idiotic ideas. We are individualists who understand that the greatest part of you is not what you share with others, but what you share with no one but yourself. That's what matters the most. If you want to learn more, go to lp.org. Right now you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a pet parent? If so, you'll want to stay up to date on the latest tech gadgets and advances for your canine or feline friend. With a ton of apps, websites, tech toys, and more, you'll want to be in the know when it comes to the real treasures and the duds. For that information, listen for Pet Lover Geek with host Lorian Clemens. We test and discuss what's hot and what's not on the pet front, so you'll be better informed. Tune in Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
I'm busy and so is my family. Leftover pizza and unhealthy takeout isn't really doing it for us anymore. Just ask my bathroom scale. That all changed when I found Freshly. For less than $10 a meal, Freshly delivers 6 meals a week, always fresh, never frozen, prepared by top chefs and nutritionists using the best, freshest, gluten-free ingredients. The best part is the menu is always new and fresh, just like the food, and it only takes 3 minutes for me to prepare breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and there's no messy cleanup and no dishes. My family loves the choices and the taste, and Freshly delivers to my home and my office, so I eat healthy all day, every day. If you're tired of the same old cardboard delivery and takeout, try out Freshly.com today and save $20 on your first order using coupon code VAH639 at Freshly.com. Your taste buds and your scale will thank you. So save $20 today with coupon code VAH639 at Freshly.com.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Let's take a few more questions. Richard asks, the thoughts on people running under the GOP as opposed to the Libertarian Party. That's an interesting question. To me, here I'm going to speak as myself, not as an official representative. To me, honestly, the party label doesn't matter that much. I just don't really think it matters that much. There's Republicans that I disagree with. There's Democrats I disagree with. And there's Libertarians that I disagree with. I don't think that somebody who's running under an LP banner is automatically better than somebody who's running under a GOP banner. To suggest that, for example, Ron Paul hasn't done majorly good things for the Liberty movement, it doesn't make sense to me. That said, many of the people who are choosing to run under the GOP banner are doing so because they just simply agree with GOP positions, and sometimes those positions are bad. One of the big ones is the idea of preemptive, never-ending, ongoing war. Some of the people who have left the Libertarian Party to run as Republicans, they support that. They left not despite the Republican Party's backwards policies, but because of them. And so a lot of those people are people who I wouldn't vote for. But it's not because they're Republicans or because they've, you know, joined the Republican Party or left the Libertarian Party or whatever, but it's because their policies are atrocious. And I mentioned one of the former presidential candidates, you know, who left to join the GOP. His policies are horrifically bad. I mean, their domestic policies are not good, but the foreign policies are just unbelievably bad, where the specific area in which he supports the Republican view is the thing where we're squandering blood and money and treasure and creating enemies. And there's of all the Republican policies, that's the worst one. There's nothing that the Republican Party does that's worse than its pro-war stance. Let's take another question. We have Alex, who asks, what is the stance on getting people elected? Those that can be pragmatic yet stand for principles. So I'm going to try to unpack this question because, I mean, on the surface, the question is like, do we want to get people elected? Yeah, sure. I mean, why wouldn't we? But that's not really the question being asked here. The question is, what is my view of making the views more mainstream or more safe or more harmless or more so boring that no one knows what they mean, or so convoluted that no one can understand them, in order to trick people into voting libertarian, and then we kind of get there and do a little bait and switch? What's my view on that? Well, it's dishonest and it's ineffective. It's dishonest for obvious reasons. When you're lying, that's dishonest. I don't know how we can be the party of principle if we're going to start lying to everybody on things that matter so fundamentally. But it also doesn't work. People who want to vote for a mainstream ideology, they're going to vote Democrat or Republican. It's the sensible thing to do. If you want a Democrat or Republican ideology, you're going to vote for Democrats or Republicans. Democrats and Republicans have nearly the same ideology. How can you tell? They never really talk about their policy differences. They mostly talk about how the other person's so evil that you got to vote for us. We saw this in the last election. Hillary's evil, vote for Trump. Trump is evil, vote for Hillary. They weren't talking about policies because their policies are the same. perpetual war, keep going with the war on drugs, maintain the income tax, etc. If you want to run an effective movement, you need to talk about what makes it different. What is it that libertarians do that Republicans and Democrats don't do? Neither does. There's a long list. It's nearly everything. Our stance on war, our stance on the war on drugs, ending the income tax, getting government out of schools. Yes, those ideas are going to scare people. That's the whole damn point. Because the first phase in getting a new idea across is to get people to notice the new idea. If you hide your idea in overly polite rhetoric, no one's going to notice. No one's going to care. The biggest thing that happens to libertarian candidates that are too soft-spoken is they get ignored. That's how you destroy a movement. Make sure that it can be ignored. If you make a movement that cannot be ignored, well, then we're in business. Anil asks, what are the ideological differences between the Libertarian and Constitutional Party and the Constitution Party? There are a few. I mean, the Constitution Party is very grounded in a religious type ideology. I don't think that the Constitution Party has people who are terribly bad. But there are areas in which I disagree. They have a very different view on the role of war. They are, in a lot of ways, from what I understand, and again, not an expert, but they are a pro-war party. Libertarian Party is an anti-war party. We believe in shutting down foreign military bases, bringing the troops home. We believe in reducing the size and scope and cost of the military. We don't believe that we need a standing army of 1 million people. Granted, not all libertarians are as kind of hardcore and radical as myself, but there's no libertarian view that allows for this kind of never-ending preemptive war. Donald asks, name some countries that have a libertarian party that is more successful than the USA so we can learn from them. That's an interesting question. There are a few. I can't think of them off the top of my head. But the main difference is that there's countries that have proportional representation. That means if your party gets, say, 5% of the votes, you get 5% of the seats in the legislature. America, we don't have that. It would be better if we did. You would get things that make more sense. You would get more libertarian policies. We could end the income tax, or we could fight to end the income tax at least. But right now we can't. We can outside, but we can't inside the legislature. And so it's just the structure of the thing that makes things different. Other countries don't have the same ballot access blockades that we do. Right now the Republicans and Democrats spend millions every year trying to keep the Libertarian Party off the ballot. Why? People like our ideas. They don't like their ideas. They vote for those other parties out of fear or laziness or inertia. But they vote for us because they want to. So what can we do? We work to change those election laws. We need to get laws like approval of voting passed. And that makes a huge difference. Instant runoff voting makes a huge difference. Getting rid of ballot access restrictions, these make huge differences. And fighting these legal fights is important. And we've had some success, and we're starting to have more and more successes. That's what makes that different. So we do have a harder task here in the United States. But it's not insurmountable. It's something we can do, and we've been moving forward. And we're going to keep moving forward. Isaac asks, why do you think the LP attracts conspiracy theorists? Well, there's two types of conspiracy theorists. I mean, there's some people that just have paranoid ideas, and that you'll find that in any political party. You find that in the Libertarian Party and the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. That's the thing about politics. In politics, we all have one vote. Therefore, to a certain extent, we're all equal. But there's a different type of conspiracy theorist, which I think is not the same thing at all. People who recognize that when organizations have a vested interest that coincide, they will work together. For example, I've often mentioned that military contractors donate a lot of money to Democrats and Republicans so that they can keep war going and keep on buying their weapons. Maybe that makes me a conspiracy theorist because I'm describing what is technically a conspiracy, people working together on something vaguely illegal or illicit or at least immoral. But I also think it's just the truth, and there's plenty of evidence to back it up. You look at how much money these defense contractors, these military contractors spend on lobbying. They're doing it for a reason. And a lot of people in the Libertarian Party have seen that. That's why they joined the Libertarian Party. So many of the people in the Libertarian Party now used to work for defense contractors. They saw what was going on. They were disgusted by it. Or they worked on the other side, procurement for the U.S. government, and they were disgusted by that. They saw what was happening. Here in D.C., you see, I mean, lobbying is a part of D.C. culture, and you see how it works. It is what it is what many people would call a, quote, conspiracy, but it's politics. It's people donating so they get a benefit. The Libertarian Party, we want to make government so small that it cannot possibly give anyone special favors. So small that it doesn't have the ability to give a special favor. That's what we want. And can we make that happen? Yes, absolutely. But to make it happen, we need to run for office, and we need to run big, bold campaigns. I'm not talking about these, let me just say absolutely nothing and pray that people, you know, vote for me because they, you know, like the way I look or they think I'm really handsome or something like that and they don't hear my ideas. Not that kind of namby-pamby stuff. I'm talking about a real campaign, ending the income tax, ending the drug war, constitutional carry, getting government out of education entirely, shutting down all government schools and vouchers and charters and every other top form of theft, ending welfare completely, ending all this militarism, allowing currency competition so we can get rid of the Federal Reserve. That's what I'm talking about. Is it going to make some people angry? Sure, but they're not going to be ignoring you. And that's the most important thing when it comes to these, to an upstart party like ours. That's what really matters. Alan asks, what are the current membership numbers? Well, the Libertarian Party has an interesting, you have a few things that we look at. One, sometimes when people say membership, they mean registrations. And for the first time in history, or in the last many decades, in the last century, a third party has broken 500,000 registrations. And that's the Libertarian Party. Another time, people look at members as dues-paying members. I don't actually have the numbers off the top of my head. It's somewhere between 15 and 20,000. Those are people who are willing to donate money to the Libertarian Party. If you're not already a dues-paying member, I highly recommend it. That's how you finance the revolution. I myself am a monthly pledge member, and I'm always, you know, when I see the great thing the Libertarian Party is doing, I'm saying, yeah, that's money that's well spent. That is money that the Libertarian Party can use to advance liberty more than I can advance liberty with that same amount of money. So I think that's really impressive that we can see that kind of growth. We're going to take a couple more questions in the next segment. But right now, I want to remind you guys, if you want to get involved in a campaign, this is the time to do it. Campaigns are starting now. They start about a year before a major election. 2014 is a major, major, major election. It's the midterm election, and given the political climate right now, it's going to be one of the most important and exciting political campaign seasons that I think we've seen in a long time. And if you want to get involved, go to lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Music.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. Let's take some more questions. The next question is a favorite one. Anthony asks, when will, I think what he means to say is, when will the Libertarian Party get a new vice chair? In other words, I don't think he's a huge fan of some of my views. That is up to you. If you want to vote for or against me, or vote for or against Nick Sarwark, or vote for or against anybody else, you got to be at the National Convention 2018. It's going to be in New Orleans. It is going to be incredible. I mean, New Orleans is always a fun city. You had a political convention. You had a libertarian political convention. It's going to be extremely exciting. It's going to be, I think it's going to be probably one of the best conventions we've ever had. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be getting my tickets this week, and I strongly encourage you to do that. Bill asks, why is LP leadership not disavowing socialist and mutualist infiltrators who are hell-bent on destroying the party? That's an interesting question. I believe that LP leadership, at least in me, would certainly be considered in part of that group, has been disavowing socialism for a long time and is continuing to disavow socialism for a long time. Socialism, as in state-run socialism, has no place in the Libertarian Party at all. If somebody is not willing, and you've seen me do this publicly many times, somebody believes that government schools, for example, or government welfare, for example, or any of the other forms of socialism or socialist medicine, for example, I've basically said that such a person is not a libertarian at all. And I stand by that now. There is no room for forced socialism in a libertarian society. There's no room for those who advocate for socialism, force-based socialism, state socialism in the Libertarian Party. That said, if somebody wants to go buy a bunch of land and run a commune on it, be my guest. But that means we do have to be vigilant. The issue is when people have bad ideas, and I do think socialism, even voluntary socialism, is a pretty bad idea. Sometimes when those ideas fail, they're like, well, now we need the government to force it to work, and then we end up with a problem. But if somebody wants to go and not buy a bunch of land, set up a commune, fine, go ahead, who cares? If somebody wants to say that they have a right to my land, well, then they don't, and I will use, whatever private or public or whatever sector law enforcement is available at the time to shut it down. Realistically, me, it's going to most likely be private. And it's going to be most likely violent, and most people are going to most likely not like it too much. But yeah, so I don't think that that's. I think that the rejection of state-based socialism, state-based communism, has been fairly absolute in the Libertarian Party. Those who and these insane ideas, I've been seeing people talking about like profitist theft and rentist theft. That's not libertarianism. That's just stupid. That doesn't even belong in the Democratic Party. There's no party that's so far, I want to say left wing, but I'll call that just insane wing that really takes that seriously. Reza asks, how can the LP clean up its glaring image issue? Well, you're right. Right now the LP has an issue of being a bunch of just folks who are invisible and frightened and afraid to speak their minds. And what that takes to fix that is candidates who are willing to run a libertarian platform. It's not easy. People are going to get mad at you. They get mad at me all the time. You got to get used to it. You need to be able, if the Libertarian Party is going to be strong and inspiring and visionary, we need to stick true aspect to our principles, especially when it's hard. Especially when it's hard is when it matters. I don't mean that we need to be able to be loud about popular issues. Anyone can do that. We need to be loud about the right issues, the ones that matter. Getting government out of education, that means ending government schools completely. Shutting down foreign military bases and bringing the troops home. Ending the income tax. Getting government out of retirement, that means shutting down Social Security. Whatever you paid in, you get back, then we shut the program down. Those are the things that matter. And that's where our candidates need to step up. And I've told you guys many times that I'm not the type of person that's going to ask somebody to do something that I won't do myself. So I'm running for office, too, with that kind of campaign. And it's not what my earlier campaigns were like. My earlier campaigns, just like most people's early campaign, excessively polite, nearly invisible. But as I ask you to do this, I am doing it myself. And does it sometimes make my social life a little more complicated? Yeah. Especially here in D.C. I mean, D.C. is the most statist part of the country on earth. Anything that I post is basically, you know, telling my family and friends that they should be fired. I mean, it's not socially easy. A lot of times great things aren't easy. Sometimes they're just not really supposed to be easy. Sometimes they're supposed to be difficult. And so to make our image as a powerful and visionary party, you know, stop apologizing, stop hemming and hawing. If people can make an idea as stupid as white nationalism popular, we can make an idea as good as getting the government completely out of education popular. But we can only do it if we say it loud enough for at least someone to hear. No one can join our cause if we're whispering. No one can join our cause if we're lying about what our cause is. In the last years, being in libertarian leadership, I've worked with so many people and learned so much about strategy. And here's what I've learned. I just don't know enough about strategy to make decisions. I don't think anyone does. However, I always pretty much know what the right thing to do is. I know what the honest thing to do is. I don't know the strategic thing to say, but I can usually figure out the honest thing to say. And that's usually not so hard. Strategy requires that you need to be able to predict the future. It's not something I can do. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a god. But I am someone that has an understanding of what truth and falsehood truth looks like and what falsehood looks like, as most of you are. And that's going to be the heart of it. If the Libertarian Party can embrace libertarianism unapologetically, clearly, boldly, loudly, we will become the most important political party in the world. We keep hemming and hawing and saying, well, no, we don't want to get out of education right now, or no, I guess we can keep 700 bases open, just not 800 bases, then the movement is going to be nothing, and it'll be a laughingstock. Boldness and honesty matter. That's why we call ourselves the Party of Principle, not because we're so good at lying, but because we know have the courage to tell the truth. A guy asked, why do we continue to ask more wedge issues as planks into our national platform? I'm going to answer this because a wedge issue can be two things. And a wedge issue can be something that divides one libertarian from another. And those are stupid. There's no reason to put those into our national platform. I mean, what's the good in that? But there's another type of issue that's called a wedge issue, which means an issue that separates libertarians from statists. And those are exactly what our platform should be. Our platform should be nothing else. It should only be a list of what makes us different from status. It should only talk about the things that separate us. It shouldn't talk about the few things we have in common, which are increasingly small. But we should focus on the things that only we believe in and the other parties do not. Ending public schools, ending welfare, bringing the troops home, ending the war on drugs, ending the income tax, getting rid of Social Security. Whatever you paid into Social Security, you get that money back, and then we shut the whole program down. That's what we should be talking about. Treg asks, what are my individual rights? That's going to be the last question for today because we're basically out of time. But what are my individual rights? There's a list of them. It's the Bill of Rights. I think it's about as good as a list as I've ever seen. But our individual rights come down to this. Do anything you want, except don't hurt anyone and don't steal their stuff. Those are your rights. Anything else is fair game. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.